You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
For Deanna Spingola today on the Spingola Speaks radio program. Welcome, welcome. The date, I haven't done it so I don't even keep track of the date anymore. It is September 14th, 2019, a beautiful Saturday. We've got a lot to talk about today. I'm going to have a special guest, very special guest, in fact. In fact, one that's you probably haven't heard before. Every once in a while, someone comes along and does their due diligence and does some seriously incredible research. And that's who we have for you today. Hopefully, she'll become a smashing success here in this alternative movement. Anyway, welcome to Republic Broadcasting. I wanted to talk to you today because I'm doing this massive documentary. Which in the end will probably be a 40-hour presentation. It's more of a book than it is a documentary, but I thought, hey, what if I put together a whole book in audio and video, reading all the studies for you so that you don't have to? Because, you know, research is not fun. You know, I can take my 4,000 hours of research and put it down to 40 hours, and maybe you'd actually be willing to sit through that and become an expert in the subject. Become as expert as you possibly can be using their own words, their own studies. And that's the idea, including all these, you know, the alternative doctors and people that have come out against vaccination. Not so much coming out against it, just revealing what actually happens with vaccination with these drugs. And that the side effects are actually the main effects because they are poisons. And, you know, these are, there's certain things that I've learned along the way. But I didn't really quite grasp, and that is that all medicine, all drugs are poison, is a big one. And that was sort of recognized back in, even in the 1800s, that certain amounts of poison, things that can kill you, for instance, Coumadin, or what's the drug that you take for blood pressure, for thinning the blood is actually a rat poison that you take in metformin or whatever that you take in small doses. And, you know, this is a poison that thins your blood. And if you took too much, you'd literally bleed out of your pores, which is how what happens to rats. So this is what people are taking to thin their blood. Is it ideal? No, but it does work. It is a poison. Now the problem is we think these drugs are not poisons. We actually put faith in doctors that they are somehow medicine instead of poison. And personally, I don't think poisons and medicines should be called the same thing. I think there should be a differentiation. Now, I guess the biggest point I want to make and what I want to start out with today, we'll have Camille soon, probably in the second hour, come in and join us. We're going to be talking about food, genetically altered food, and meats, lab-grown meats, and what this actually means. But for now, what I really want to do is give you a little background here on why it is that you're seeing, you know, these mandatory vaccinations, why it is that vaccine makers are actually not liable for the damages they cause. And to do that, I want to read from the Supreme Court, because you want to go to the highest source possible when you're trying to understand the law, what is behind the law, and whether you have any hope of ever changing anything. Because let's face it, you know, who makes the law? It's not you or me. It's not activist groups. It's not radio shows. It's not the news. Although it sometimes seems like it, it certainly is lobbying groups. They are the ones that write the policy and wine and dine the politicians. However, When it really comes to who makes the law, or should I say who transcribes or who mistranslates on purpose the law and puts the opinion out there, it's the courts. And ultimately it's the Supreme Court, and the vaccine issue has certainly gone to Supreme Court. Now this is, says cite as 562 U.S. in 2011. This is the opinion of the court, and that is the Supreme Court. And I'm just going to read some parts of this so that we have an understanding of, and I do this essentially to erase any hope. I'm not a big fan of the word hope. I think hope is basically, if I were to define what hope is something that causes you not to act. It causes you not to protect yourself or your children from that which promotes hope. Say, you know, hope and change, right? I'm going to run for president and my platform is going to be hope and change. Well, how is hope and change? How can that be? You know, I could see a campaign that says better public bathrooms. Even that would be something. But hope and change, two abstract terms. I mean, that's how we're fooled into voting for president. Well, he looks nice. Oh, look, it's a woman. We should vote for a woman this time. Oh, it's a black man. We should vote for, even though he's not black, he's actually white, according to his bloodline. But hey, let's change history, right? Let's do something that doesn't make any sense just because he's black or just because she's a woman. All right. Well, yeah, that's unfortunately the way we are trained. And we're going to talk about that as well today, how genetically altered foods and manufactured meats and all kinds of chemical nonsense is being promoted to us through words like sustainable and ethical. And, you know, instead of animal cruelty, we should have lab-grown meat, right? That's an appeal, you see, a fallacious appeal. But for now, let's talk about the idea that we have any hope of ever changing or that Supreme Court is ever going to be on the side of men. Because remember, what does the Supreme Court actually deal with? It deals with words. Don't ever think that the law has any emotion, that the law has any morals, that the law has any ethics that you go by. This is not how it works. So I want you to understand that when you're talking about law, the legal system of secular law, which is what this is, a judge has to recuse themselves from the case if they have a religious point of view. They cannot have a religious or moral or you know, that type of view on the case. They must try every case, and this is official. This is not just my opinion. This is how it works. You cannot have a religious view. If you do, you must recuse yourself from the case. You cannot have a personal moral view on the case, right? They are only there to discuss words. Words are everything. Law is made of nothing but words. Government is made but nothing of words. And this has to be understood that when the Supreme Court deals with something, I know that you've been entrained to think, oh, this is the moral highest standard of law. They will protect us in the Constitution and all this. Folks, I don't know how many times I have to tell you this, but the Constitution doesn't apply to you. You are not a free person. You're a person of, meaning belonging to, the United States. That is your status. Remember to separate your person from yourself. Person is your status. Okay, your status in society is under government, not over it. And therefore the Constitution doesn't apply because the Constitution only protects what government considers your God-given and unalienable rights. Unalienable means it can't be sold. Okay, this is very important to understand that when the Supreme Court talks about public common stuff in the United States, it's not speaking constitutionally. It's an administrative court. All courts in the United States dealing with public citizens of the United States are administrative. What does that mean? It means the law already applies to you. It means you don't have a choice because you're existing in a status that belongs to government. In other words, you're property. You're surety for the property of the United States. So when the Supreme Court decides something, it's not deciding. I mean, you could say it's looking at us all like cattle, how to treat its cattle, its property, right? But it's not doing so in any ethical or moral way, because that would be illegal. A judge cannot put religious moral thought into a legal situation, because legal means that which is opposed to God or God's law, the law of nature. Okay, they're two separate things. And of all things, I want you to understand that. And I want you to understand that that is why what we're going to be talking about is happening. Why meat is being allowed to be grown in a lab? Why they're now growing, openly growing vaccines on cancers? I want you to understand there is no moral compass in government. The only moral compass that government can have is religion. But remember that thing that you're so damned happy about, the separation of church and state. That happened in the United States because the United States is a corporation, purely secular, having nothing to do with religious thought. Oh, but you're so damned proud of that whole separation of church and thing, state thing, not realizing the effect that has. That means it's your power of religious action is taken away from you. Remember the difference between freedom of religion and religious freedom is night and day. These are two completely different things. Freedom of religion and religious freedom. Oh, but those are semantically they sound the same, but they're not. You see, only free men, only private men have religious freedom. That means the power to act upon your moral belief. But a United States citizen has no religious freedom. You only have freedom of religion. Freedom of religion means legally, according to the courts, that you have the right to believe whatever the hell you want. And boy, do you people believe in some strange shit. You do. Oh, everybody's got their belief systems, right? You're free to believe that. Go ahead. Even though God is truth, go ahead and believe that God is something else. That's fine. Right? Whatever. The point is, you don't have the right to act upon your religious nature, your morals, your values, your ethics that come from the moral law or the unwritten law. Whatever source you feel that comes from, the United States considers that Christianity is that source, the Bible. It's part of the common law. It was always part of the common law of England. That was transferred over. But you see, creating the United States, creating the nation, creating the corporation that is the United States, that is where the religion gets separated. And you no longer have religious freedom. You no longer have the choice to do what it says in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, which is to overthrow the government that's tyrannical. No, you don't have that anymore. That would be a religious action. That would be the action of free men, but you aren't that. You are United States citizens or nationals or whatever thing you claim to be that belongs to the United States. Right? You don't have religious freedom. You have what they define as freedom of religion, which is an administrative state, meaning that any church that you belong to, any religion, is already a corporation of the state. And 501c3 corporations, of course, are allowed to act religiously. They're bound from political activity. And that's why the Catholic Church and the Mormon Church specifically have the right to act in politics. And why you see the Mormon Church always interfering. It's why you see the Catholic Church always putting their political views out there. Why? Because they're different. They're not corporations that are bound by IRS rules. They are what's called corporation souls. You want to know why 501c3 or 3c is such a bad thing? All you gotta do is understand what a corporation's soul is. It means the church is separate from the corporation, whereas in a 501c3, the church is a corporation of the United States. But see, the Mormon Church and the Catholic Church do not belong to the United States. They are not created in the United States. What they do is they create a corporation soul and they throw all of their assets into that corporation and, but the church itself is still the people. You see, that's the difference. A church is supposed to be a people, just like a state is supposed to be a people. But in legal land, in the United States, in the corporate structure that was created as pretty much a holding company for us, us goyim, and that's what nation means, goyim, Gentile, right? That's what this was created for, folks. It was created to administer the cattle, to administer the law. It's not a matter of, see, when the Supreme Court gets together, again, they're not thinking, well, these people have religious freedom. No, they're thinking, well, they have a specific doctrine that we created against the Bible, against every tenet in natural law, the law of nature, called freedom of religion. We created that. We govern it. We say what it is. And the courts have said what it is, the freedom to believe but not to act, freedom to act on your belief. The freedom to have morals, but not the freedom to act on your morals. And that's why when they come to you and they say your children must be vaccinated, there's nothing you can do. Why? Because you don't have religious freedom. You don't have religious freedom. You're a United States citizen. You have freedom of religion. You cannot act on the moral compass, on your moral compass that says stay the hell away from these psychopaths in white coats that want to vaccinate your children without knowing anything about them. You don't have that freedom unless government tells you because you're being administered. You're not under constitutional law. Constitutional law doesn't apply to you. I can't stress this enough. Now, let's go back to the Supreme Court. In the Supreme Court, they say the most relevant to the present case, which again is 562 U.S. in 2011. Most relevant to this case, the act, meaning the act created by Congress to literally let pharmaceutical companies off the hook for the damages caused by vaccines, the act expressly eliminates liability for a vaccine's unavoidable adverse side effects. Now, I want you to understand, in this sentence right here, the Supreme Court just told you that vaccines have an unavoidable side effects. Unavoidable. They know, in other words, that vaccines have unavoidable adverse side effects. They say it right here. The whole case is based around the fact that vaccines have unavoidable adverse side effects. Right? They say this phrase over and over and over, and it's not used against the vaccine manufacturers. It's used to protect them. The Supreme Court says that because vaccine manufacturers cannot create vaccines, period, that have unavoidable adverse side effects, we're going to protect them and make them not liable for the fact that their vaccines have unavoidable side effects. This is the Supreme Court. This is the logic. And this is the problem with having a completely secular, logical view of things without any moral rectitude, without that express check and balance between the religious law, the unwritten law, the moral law, the spiritual law, and the legal law, which is the undoing of all that. The undoing of the moral law, the undoing, it is to take away the duty of men to do all the things that you hear about in the Bible, to treat each other kindly and with respect, and to do unto others as you had due to them, etc., etc., etc. You see, it takes away the duty. That's the beauty of the legal system. It takes away duty and replaces it. You know, duty in legal, the only duty you have in the legal realm, duty is a tax. In the natural law of nature under God, you have a duty to treat men equally, etc. But in the legal realm, the only duty that you pay is a tax. There's no duty. The only duty you have is to follow the law of man. Doesn't matter who you harm. In fact, the whole system relies on you harming somebody. Without harm, you can't go to court. You can harm someone.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children by living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in there.
Welcome back. I'm Clint Richardson filling in for Deanna today. We're talking about the Supreme Court case regarding manufacturers, Big Pharma, essentially, manufacturers of vaccines. And again, basically what they're saying, or what the act by Congress is saying, is that liability for punitive damages can be sought absent the failure to comply with regulatory requirements, fraud, intentional and wrongful withholding of information, in other words, not putting something on a label, etc., or other criminal or illegal activities. Most relevant to the present case, whether you can sue a pharmaceutical company or not, the act expressly eliminates liability for a vaccine's unavoidable adverse side effects, okay? Now again, you get nothing else from this, I want you to understand the Supreme Court has just stated and confirmed that vaccines are unavoidably adverse to your health. Okay, there's no getting around this. This is the whole tenet of the argument. And in order for them to deny you, the ability to sue pharmaceutical companies, they have to admit to this. They have to protect the unavoidable adverse side effects. And in order to do that, they have to admit it openly, right? Problem is, nobody ever really thinks about this. They don't read it. They don't really consider what this means. And I know, again, the reason I'm telling you this is because if you have some high hopes of ever taking this to the Supreme Court, you're going to be sadly, sadly mistaken, all right? The courts are not there to help you. The courts are secular. The courts are not there to have sympathy for you or your child. The courts are there to govern words. Here's what the act says. It says no vaccine manufacturer shall be liable. No vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1st, 1988. If the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, even though the vaccine was properly prepared and was accompanied by proper directions and warnings. Well, that makes it even worse. We know now that vaccines are unavoidably have adverse effects, but now we know that their unavoidably adverse side effects happen even when the vaccine is properly prepared, and even when it's accompanied by the proper directions and warnings that it will harm you or your children. So they know. They know absolutely that vaccines are unavoidably going to cause you harm. But you see, what they say is that there's an acceptable risk. I've read reports where they will talk about autism, SIDS, death, sudden infant death syndrome, all these different horrible things, people dying left and right. And in the conclusion of the study, guess what it says? This study found nothing new. It has an acceptable risk of death, mutilation, and everything else. Why? Why? Well, because it's unavoidable. No matter how clean, and they are not clean at all. In fact, recent tests have shown that every vaccine has contaminants in them that aren't supposed to be there. That doesn't matter. They're unavoidable. The even though clause, the court says, clarifies the word that precedes it. See, this is all they're concerned about. What does the word mean and how is it used? The even though clause clarifies the word that precedes it. It delineates the preventative measures that a vaccine manufacturer must have taken for a side effect to be considered unavoidable under the statute. So what they've just done is they've created a status for a side effect that is called unavoidable. And in order to qualify for that protective measure, the vaccine company had to have followed the FDA rules and regulations that say the vaccine is safe. The vaccine is safe, yet we understand that it might have unavoidable side effects that will harm, maim, or kill you. But it's safe. In order to qualify for the protection of the state, legal protection, for unavoidable harm, which you can do nothing about, you can't sue the harmer, the production company that made these, because they're protected because it's an unavoidable, you know, this is nuts. Well, I don't know if you're getting this, but this is freaking nuts. Provided that there was proper manufacture and warning, any remaining side effects, including those resulting from design defects, are deemed to have been unavoidable. So they give you all these warnings. They tell you this is going to cause brain damage to some people. It's going to do this. It's going to retard your child. It's going to do all these different things, may cause this. And then it says, however, it's unavoidable. And even if the design of the vaccine is incorrect or a mistake or purposely bad, vaccine manufacturers are not Christians. It's unavoidable harm. We'll be back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
Alright, let's go back. Here on Republic Broadcasting. I'm Clint, filling in for Deanna today, and we're talking about the Supreme Court case that pretty much gave carte blanche protection to vaccine manufacturers, and said that side effects are unavoidable, and therefore, you know, this is the logic. Unavoidable side effects, well, that means that there's no way that a vaccine can be made without unavoidable side effects. So we must protect the vaccine manufacturers. And later on in the course, they explain their reasoning. Their reasoning is that when vaccine companies weren't protected, we had a run of lawsuits that put vaccine companies out of business. People sued for the damages that these vaccines caused to them and their children, and therefore, no more vaccine company. And you know what that means? That means no more bad designs, no more bad ingredients, because there's no more vaccine company, right? Their logic is that people won't be vaccinated, which again is a complete fallacy. Vaccines do not work the way they say they do. And in fact, what we're finding today is that vaccines are killing us slowly and that there's probably going to be a major outbreak of genetically altered disease caused by vaccines. That sort of like antibiotics are immune to, bacteria are becoming immune to antibiotics. So too are vaccine-caused diseases, which are genetically altered diseases, going to be immune from any treatments. You're taking the bug and you're altering it to a form that's not recognizable by nature, therefore not recognizable by the human body. It treats the genetically altered dead, ingredient in the vaccine as an allergy. It's just like you were poked by a wasp or by a dirty nail. You're getting crap in your body and your body reacts. And it, unfortunately, it's so similar to something in your own body that it causes autoimmune disease. Your body starts attacking itself. Most of our illnesses are caused from this type of reaction where your body creates antibodies against its own functions. And hey, provided that there was proper manufacturer and warning, any remaining side effects, including those resulting from design defects, are deemed to have been unavoidable. So, in other words, I went blind. That's not a listed side effect. I should be able to sue. Oh, no, 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 no. No, no, it was unavoidable. You see? Anything. I mean, my arms and legs fell off. My head fell off. My brain exploded. Oh, sorry, that's unavoidable because we have to protect vaccine manufacturers because the second you allow people to sue vaccine manufacturers for harm, there won't be any vaccine manufacturers. That's their logic. That's them protecting you. Oh, I'm sorry, they don't protect you. They don't give a crap about you. They're protecting business. They're protecting commerce. You understand? If a manufacturer could be held liable for failure to use a different design, the word unavoidable would do no work. See, all they care about is the words. They're defending words. They're not defending you. There is not one mention in this case of the pain and suffering and death they're causing you. No, 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 no. All they give a crap about is the words. A side effect of a vaccine could always have been avoidable by the use of a differently designed vaccine not containing the harmful element, they say. Therefore, we can't say that the side effects, the death, the destruction of the human race is avoidable. It can't be avoidable, because if it's avoidable, then you can sue the manufacturer, just like in every other thing in the world. Right? If I do anything other than with Big Pharma, if I do anything, if I am a company, I make a bad product, say I'm a car maker, I have to recall the part. I have to recall the car and fix it for free. I have to do this. I have to pay out lawsuits. I have to do all this. But with vaccine manufacturers, absolutely not. Now you tell me, seriously, if I were to come to you and say, hey boys, guess what? You can make those, you can design those vaccines any way you want to, because we've just got, the Supreme Court just said that whatever side effect you cause is considered unavoidable and you're protected. All you gotta do is follow these guidelines. Three things. You have to list the side effects, you have to do this, and you have to do that. Otherwise, hey, you can do whatever you want, and that is why all vaccines are contaminated, have things in them they shouldn't. But even the things that should be in there, of course, are known to cause disease. Not disease, immediate disease. Some of them are called what we call slow virus, right? Slow matter, slow pus, slow junk in your body that eventually destroys you or your mind. But you see, these are unavoidable. This is freaking nuts, by the way. I mean, when I read this, I couldn't believe it. I practically crapped myself when I saw that in the Supreme Court, they recognize the side effects of vaccines are unavoidable. Even though the worst possible things, I just couldn't believe it. I had to share this with you. Again, there's this purely a semantic argument. What is unavoidable? What is avoidable? What is a design defect? What is not a design defect? It has nothing, again, they don't give a crap about you in this thing. They don't ever mention anything about the people that are harmed. They don't care. That's not their job. They can't have a moral argument. They have to recuse themselves for religious thought. The language of the provision must suggest the design of the vaccine is a given, not subject to question in a tort action. Tort means to be harmed. So you don't have the right of tort, by the way. That's something that only the free people have. You're not. The legal system doesn't allow tort for citizens of the United States. You should look that up. I think it's in my book. What the statute establishes as a complete defense must be unavoidability. In other words, safe manufacture and warning with respect to the particular design, which plainly implies that the design itself is not open to question. Imagine that. Imagine being a car maker, for instance, or an airplane maker, and your design is not open to question, right? I mean, well, I'm gonna make a car that explodes and no one can do a damn thing about it. I mean, this is nuts, folks. The dissent, by the way, there was a dissenting view, and it's just as important as the majority view. However, it's not taken into consideration for the case. But you can quote a dissenting view. You should know that. The dissent advocates for another possibility, that the side effect is unavoidable, where there is no feasible alternative design that would eliminate the side effect of the vaccine without compromising its cost and utility. What do they care about? cost, commerce. What this is saying in dissent is that if there is another design that would be actually safe and have no unavoidable side effects, they don't have to use it if it costs too much. It costs too much to have something safe, therefore we accept unavoidable side effects. That's all they can give a crap about. They're protecting the corporate structure. That's what the Supreme Court does. Do you understand? Any hope that you have that there is some moral justice going on in America, there is not. The dissent's principal textual argument is mistaken, says the majority. We agree with its premise that side effects that were unavoidable must refer to side effects caused by a vaccine's design. We do not comprehend, however, the second step of its reasoning, which is that the use of the conditional term if in the introductory phrase, if the injury or death resulted from side effects that were unavoidable, plainly implies that some side effects stemming from a vaccine's design are unavoidable. Oh, gotta laugh. While others are avoidable. That is not so. The if clause makes total sense whether the design to which unavoidable refers is, as the dissent believes, any feasible design, making the side effects of the design used for the vaccine at issue avoidable, or, as we believe, as the majority of psychopaths, the particular design used for the vaccine at issue, making its side effects unavoidable. What are they arguing over? Did you catch it? The word if. You remember when President Clinton said, well, could you please define what the word is? How is the word is being used in reference to my cigar incident? Right? Did I lie? Or are we using the word is incorrectly? Was there a crime? Or is this just semantic nonsense? You see, they're not considering reality ever. There is no reality going on here. This is purely words. And the word at hand is if. What does if mean, folks? Doesn't matter how much you're being harmed, that your children are autistic, deformed, retarded because of vaccines, which is the proper language. You see what I'm saying here? The question at hand is not whether we're causing harm. The question at hand is what the word frickin' if means. Under the later view, the condition established by the if clause is that the vaccine have been properly labeled and manufactured, and under the former, that it have been properly designed, labeled, and manufactured. Neither view renders the if clause a nullity. Oh, man. You gotta love it. I mean, this is America, folks. Petitioners in the dissent's textual argument, okay, the textual argument, not the moral argument, not the true sense of what has happened, not the harm, only the textual argument is being discussed. And they use the word if incorrectly, according to the majority. Petitioners in the dissent's textual argument also rest upon the proposition that the word unavoidable in section 300AA-22B, section 1, is a term of art. How many times have I talked about terms of art? That's the whole legal language that incorporates comment K to restatement second of torts, section, subsection 42, the big long thing. The restatement generally holds a manufacturer strictly liable for harm. This was before. The restatement generally holds a manufacturer of vaccines strictly liable for harm to person or property caused by any product in a defective condition unreasonably dangerous to the user. But how can it be unreasonably dangerous if the danger is unavoidable? Isn't that brilliant? You know that it took the most evil of frickin' attorneys. And remember, all judges, even the Supreme Court, you know, for the most part, they're studying in law, they're attorneys, they're agents. They're agents of government. They're not on your side, is the point. Any product in a defective condition unreasonably dangerous to the user, that describes all drugs, all vaccines, all cars, all airplanes, all products in the world. But you see, because of words, we're able to say, well, this doesn't apply to vaccines. Why? Because if it did apply to vaccines, there'd be no vaccine makers. Literally, they'd all go out of business because they're causing such drastic, horrible harm to people. Comet K exempts from this strict liability rule unavoidably unsafe product. So, the rule applies to every and any product in a defective condition unreasonably dangerous to the user, and that describes all vaccines. However, comment K in the law states, or exempts from the law. In other words, the law exists, but vaccine manufacturers are exempt from the law. They don't follow the law. They're not bound by the law. There's no sanctions of law. They will not get in trouble, and they will not even pay any damages because the damages come from you. You are paying into a fund when you get a vaccine. You, the money that pays for the vaccine damages is a tax, a levy put upon a duty, right? A duty to put on the vaccine in order to pay for damages caused by the vaccine so that the vaccine manufacturers don't get sued and go out of business. Are you getting this? This is the incentive. This is what you're up against anytime you go against this corporate structure. This is not a government, folks. Government implies that you're actually, you know, doing something good. No, no, this is a commercial enterprise called the United States. And that is very apparent here. And that commercial enterprise is under government, not over it. Congress is the board of directors of the corporation. They're called employees. They're not free and independent statesmen when it comes to being congressmen of the United States. They wear two hats. They're in charge of both the de jure and the de facto United States. One is the United States of America. One is just United States, a corporation in which Washington, D.C., a district outside of any of the 50 states, a foreign land, a foreign district. By the way, the word district translates to Caesar, you know, Caesar from the Bible who wanted to tax every man, which means register. To tax is to register. In other words, to certify, to make us all employees, essentially. Members, that's what district means. So vaccine manufacturers, they're exempt from the law. They are lawless. That's what it means. They have license to break the law. As long as semantically, in words, they follow the FDA guidelines. The FDA being run by a bunch of pharma people. In fact, the corporation that actually makes vaccine recommendations is almost exclusively university and pharma companies. Universities are the ones who hold all the patents on these drugs. Clip this off, nip this off in the butt. I just want to make it clear that there is no hope for legislating this whole thing, this mandatory vaccination thing, all of this. This is a plan that is so much deeper then, you know, this is being protected at the very top, but I'm reading you that protective, case right now. Again, this is the Supreme Court case. And I just wanted to finish off here and then we're going to get to our guests. Boy, do we have a show for you on what is becoming of our food, if you can even call it food anymore. The phrase, even though, again, all that matters is words. The phrase, even though in the clause, even though the vaccine was properly prepared and labeled, is meant to signal the unexpected, unavoidable side effects, persist despite best manufacturing and labeling practices. But the petitioner's reading eliminates any opposition between the even though clause, called a concessive subordinate clause by grammarians, and the word unavoidable. You see, it's all about grammar. Nothing else matters. This is purely a contextual word in a term of art argument. It has nothing to do with the actual harm being done. Their reading makes preemption turn equally on unavoidability, proper preparation, and proper labeling. Thus, the dissent twice refers to the requirements of proper preparation and proper labeling as two additional prerequisites for preemption, independent of unavoidability. Oh boy. The primary textual justification, not moral, not spiritual, not medical, just the primary textual justification for the dissent's position depends on that independence. But leaking independent ideas is the job of coordinating junction like and, not subordinate conjunction like even though. So if it would have said and instead of even though, that and you can sue the manufacturers. But instead, because Congress wrote even though, not if or and, you see how this works. Now, anybody that's going to tell me I'm a wordsmith, anybody that's going to tell me, oh, that's just semantics, anybody that's going to tell me I don't give a crap about words and what they mean, I give you the absolute most psychopathic lawsuit on earth. And now I will say that the Supreme Court also had some really good ones on eugenics and how people should be eugenically euthanized. In other words, have their tubes cut. There's some really great stuff on that too by some of the most respected, prestigious judges out there in history. Right? They were really in support of eugenics. Don't get me wrong. That was pretty psychopathic too. But when it comes to the ultimate in psychopathy, when it comes to the ultimate proof that words, false two-letter words mean everything, this is it, folks. I invite you to read the whole case, or you can wait for my documentary and I'll read it for you. We'll be back with our guest.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
second hour of the Deanna Spingola Speaks program. I'm Clint Richardson filling in today. Yeah, I've got a guest for you today, and I want to tell you, this is sort of reminiscent for me of when Deanna Spingola and I first met. I had just done my first documentary, and that's kind of where our guest Camille is today. She started doing a lot of research, and she started doing a whole lot of research into food and the basically food apocalypse that's happening right before our eyes. Maybe you've heard that Burger King and every other restaurant out there is now providing you this fake meat thing, the promotion of clean meat, which is lab-grown meat, something that has been predictively programmed into us in various entertainment models. I am by no means an expert on this, although I've certainly looked into it. I will say, though, that I want you guys to go check out Camille's website, or I should say her YouTube site. I actually don't even know if she has a website. But her YouTube is Please Stop the Ride. That's Please Stop the Ride. And on there you will find her commentary and some really, really fantastically done videos. And I have her on today because long ago Deanna Spingola gave me a break and had me on my first, I guess you could say, commercial radio program. And you know, I'm sort of passing it on, sort of replaying the favor, if you will, because I think Camille is one of the few people that actually can see what the hell's going on. I mean, we all see a lot of crap going on, but she has gone to the next level. This stuff. We were having a little connection issue. Hopefully we are good now. And if we are, well, let me introduce you to Camille. Welcome, Camille.
Hi, Clint. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you're here because, I mean, I'm prepared to learn a lot today. I gotta be honest, I'm quite shocked at what you've uncovered. Like, you've gone the extra mile and shown this organized thing. And it's not just organized. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Camille, just to set the mood here. This is not being organized necessarily by men. This is being organized by an artificial intelligence as well.
Oh, definitely artificial intelligence. Machine learning is playing a huge part in this. Yeah. But the men are involved, the male and female, I'm sure. There's loads of women-led companies involved in this. But,
Sure. So let me set the mood here by saying that I remember in my first vaccine documentary, I exposed a company called Seminex, right? Seminex was using aborted fetal tissue, specifically the taste buds, the taste buds of aborted fetuses. I'm connecting them to basically machinery, to boards, to microchips, and using that taste response as a way to improve on the taste of artificial sweeteners and artificial ingredients, synthetic ingredients in foods. And perhaps you've noticed, now they got into big trouble, Kraft, Pepsi, all these companies that were using this technology to improve the taste of their diet sodas and their diet foods and generally all around food ingredients, which are scary just in themselves. All of a sudden you have, you know, at this point, I hate to admit it, but I've tried some of these new artificial sweeteners that people put as fruit punch, or, you know, they're labeled as fruit punch, and of course they have the cancerous causing color, blue number twos and all that stuff. I've tried these things, and I gotta say, the excitability, the real taste, the fact that they have synthesized things now, thanks to the fact that they used aborted fetal tissue, right? Completely unethically, immorally, without any conscience whatsoever, to improve the taste of something synthetic so that we accept it even more so, and keeping in mind that that synthetic reaction in the body actually triggers all the things that would cause diabetes. It triggers the body to think that it's getting sugar. It produces the insulin to combat the overabundance of sugar, and then, well, gosh, now you have insulin with nothing to do because there's no actual sugar in the body. See, that's the reaction that it causes in the body. And that's what's happening with synthetic foods a lot of times, is that it's creating reactions in the body, and then whatever chemical the body produces, that has nothing to do. And it's causing disease. It's causing all kinds of harmful things. Now, take that as the bottom line example. What do we do to make foods taste like food? What do we do to make synthetic things taste more realistic so that people will accept them despite our warnings of causing cancer, the warnings of causing harmful side effects, which are, you know, in this case, not yet protected by the law? What do we do to make things taste better? Right? That was 10 years ago, folks. 10 years ago. Now, what I want to talk about today, Camille, is what has happened since that 10-year process in which it was found out and exposed, and those companies had to issue apology letters and, you know, pretend like they're still not doing the same thing just because they got rid of that one company. The point is not that, of course, the company got abandoned. The fact is they did all the research, they used all the research, and they continue to use the research funded by that aborted tissue, right? So it's not like them saying, sorry, we're not using that company anymore, did anything. No, they just moved on to bigger and better things. So we're talking about what has happened since then. Now, in one of your videos, you've mentioned all these things that I've actually never heard of. The Protein Data Bank, the American Type Culture Collection, the Earth Biogenome Project, the Global Genome Biodiversity Network, and other such frightening sounding things. The Vertebrae Genome Project, the Earth Bank of Codes. What the hell are these things? Plant Genome Project, the Insect Genome Project, the Earth Blank. It's just, you're mentioning things that I have never heard of. And that's, I mean, wow. Explain what the hell's happening here. This is obviously a much bigger organized thing. And what we're talking about, to be clear, synthetic life, synthetic growth of meat, synthetic growth of food. And it's very frightening.
And flavors and essential oils and all different things that they're able to synthesize, because they've been sampling everything on Earth, and that has to make people that have gotten those DNA tests shudder a little bit, because you got to figure they're going to be involved in this too. But yeah, now they're able to apply their machine learning, which there's at least two companies that I'm aware of. There's Just Foods and Notco, that's a South American company, but they do have a base in Silicon Valley, like so many of these companies. This is heavily coming out of the technology land. As the machine learning, they're able to do their the mix and match to make anything that they want with plants or whatever base they want, your celebrity cultures, your cultures, or pea protein, so they say. Not pea protein, but they're able to say that they can give you a plant-based food. Like, I know the cellular agriculture, like they call it, is a very scary, and I don't doubt that it's definitely real. The plant-based stuff is what just throws me for a loop, because you look at the ingredients list and people think, I'm eating peas, I'm eating mung beans, but you have to look at the patents on these foods. You cannot trust your ingredients list. The patents tell a whole different story of what they're doing, what they're able to use, and still fit under it. And I'm not saying I'm a patent expert, but it's enough to make you hesitate on these things. And when they say that they can make butter that doesn't come from a cow, and there's Perfect Day Foods has recently released a DNA equivalent ice cream that tastes and has the same mouthfeel as dairy ice cream. It's crazy.
mouthfeel. Yeah. I certainly remember that was one of the big sort of, I mean, at the time it was funny, but you know, they're doing all these things essentially to, between taste and mouthfeel and all these different chemicals basically to, you know, you say technology and when you look at the word technology, really what that word means, and this is very important for people to understand, technology means only one thing, and that's art. Art is a copy of the original. Art, technology is art. That's all it is. No matter how deep into the programming or pixels or whatever you, this is art. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to turn art into reality. They're trying to get us to accept art as real, technology as real. And they even use the term matrix, right? They say that we will produce a food and the matrix of the food will be this, right? And what is the matrix but art, technology? It's purely a code of words, a code of symbols, right? So what we're talking, and when you talk about DNA, what are we talking about? We're talking about the programming, essentially, of life itself, the programming of creation, of God, the design of nature. You don't have to believe in the anthropomorphic version of God to understand that what we're talking about is the inversion of nature, right? We're talking about replacing nature in every way, shape, and form, which unfortunately also entails you having to fix all the problems that causes along the way. The health problems from digesting art instead of the real thing, right? You're digesting a copy of something that has nothing to do with the original, but it's made to look like the original. It's made to feel like the original. It's even made to taste like the original. The consistency of this artificial meat. And really, it's not even artificial, it's synthesized. In other words, it is meat, but it's not meat from reality, from nature. It's manufactured, it's art that we're supposed to accept as real. This is very, very, I mean, I can't use the language I want to use. This is effed up. I mean, this is like the scariest thing. This is like, I mean, I've seen so many different movies that portray this in bad ways, but never in a good way.
Oh, yeah. They definitely want to remake everything. If people have read George Church's Regenesis, you know, the title is How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. They talk pretty plainly in here on how they want to change us all. To change everything to be better, right? Because they can control. They've got these godlike powers with computational protein design and all of their different tools that they can do anything. How bad could that end up? This could never.
That's the point. The point I was trying to make in the first hour is that we don't any longer have, you know, that would be someone that would be strung up on a cross or put, you know, made an example in past times, because you would want to kill that person. Literally, you would want to not kill the man, but kill the power of the man or the person, the flattering title he carries that allows him the license to break the law. You would put that man as an example, but see, we're no longer in that position. We no longer have that religious, compass. We cannot act upon our moral obligations. We cannot defend nature. Literally, we cannot defend nature, or if you want to use the correct term, we can't defend God. We can't defend the very source of our life at this point, because we've all accepted these legal doctrines. We've all accepted something that is unnatural. We've accepted the fact that art will be better and replace nature. I can't stress that enough, that that is what is happening, and you just said it by the title, say the title of that the work again.
It's Regenesis, How Synthetic Biology Will Reinvent Nature and Ourselves. Yeah, it's a crazy book, definitely, but they're making up the words as they go along, like they have us following them. People are so so mind controlled to think that go to college and get in this great program at Harvard and all these different things that you're going to work for the betterment of society, but it's really the downfall. And this stuff is celebrated. It's crazy. There's big contests and they're excited to do it, but then they lie to us. Well, not lie, right? We don't know to look, or we don't care to look for what they really mean by these things. Like they call the cellular meat, the clean meat. They were pushing it as clean meat. It was a tie between clean and safe. What was going to be the better thing? They did a survey. But they even say that their goal is not to express what's scientifically accurate, but to elicit the most public support for the product. But now clean doesn't work anymore, they've decided. I'm not saying it's because I've been going, oh my God, this is what they mean. But now they're going with cultivated. Apparently cultivated. The same people that did this big survey and learned that cultured and things like that, people don't want to hear that. Now they say, you know what, clean, that's confusing. It means other meat is dirty, which a lot of it probably is. But,
well, yeah, I guess they can't use the word green either, right? Because green meat, that doesn't sound too good. What they are calling it, though, this is what bugs me the most, because you mentioned universities, and I found in my research doing this, universities are like the biggest organized crime unit. Like education is lowest on the list of what universities actually do. Syndicalism in universities, the protectionism of government over universities is beyond anything I can put into a few words. Universities are they're in patent wars. They're the ones that hold all these patents for drugs and vaccines and fake, you know, all these labs. All the money that goes into universities are going towards inventing these types of things. So you're talking about universities holding patents on all this stuff. That, you know, that's where the majority of bad stuff comes from, is the university system. I didn't realize how bad. I knew it was bad, but I didn't know how bad it actually was when you actually look into the university system. Again, something that'll be in the whole presentation I'm doing. But what universities are then also teaching their students, that things like geoengineering, you know, changing, reseeding the oceans and geoengineering the skies and the, you know, the earth and changing everything is a good thing. It's going to save us. It's the kids are growing up thinking they're going to save the planet. And one of the things they're teaching is that this idea of sustainability, which is code word for Agenda 21. Of course, I think anybody in this audience understands that now Agenda 2030 from the United Nations. But what we're talking about here is a brainwashing of the younger generations that actually believe that fake meat, fake plant-based synthetic foods that are actually really dangerous to the human body and to the nature itself are actually sustainable and ethical. Growing meat, in other words, growing cancerous fibers of muscle, and you know, that's really what we're talking about here. We'll talk about that. You're growing cancer in a lab and calling it meat, right? What is carcinogenesis but growth without purpose, right? That's what we're talking about. So when we get back, we'll talk about basically this programming that's happening with younger generations and on TV and everything else. But this is sustainable. This is ethical. This is going to be good for the planet. We'll be back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. By living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in there. Watching us close.
Welcome back. You're tuned into Republic Broadcasting. I'm Clint Richardson holding the reins today. Deanna should be back next week for you. My guest today Her YouTube channel is Please Stop the Ride. I highly recommend going there and checking out her videos. She's done a lot of work to inform you on what is happening with the strange, in the strange world of synthetic things, especially food. It's a very bizarre and strange journey indeed. Camille is my guest. Before the break, we're talking about essentially the brainwashing that's happening with not just the younger generations in the universities, but pretty much all of us with special arty, green type of terms like sustainability and, ethical treatment of animals. You know, I can think of, we used to call this hell. Me and Patrick Jordan. Hell is when you're growing, life in a lab, connecting it to whatever you're connecting it to, you know, motherboards, chips, whatever. And so you have this sort of limbo state of existence. And this is what we're talking about is hell, in my opinion. We're talking about growing cancerous things, basically, and calling it food or calling it, and the problem with that is that it's going to lead to, and it is leading to, synthetic life, meaning property, cloning has become a household term, etc. So we're not talking about just meat or food here. We're talking about this is like the gateway drug, if you will, that's going to lead to everything else. You know, everything dystopian that you've ever seen in any movie, that's what we're talking about here. But, the brainwashing that's going on with these pretty words, isn't that really what the problem is? Because we can't even think for ourselves anymore. One of the harshest things they're facing in advertising this is that people don't want synthetic stuff. What they want, is real. They want meat. They want a hamburger. And if the taste or the texture or the feeling, the mouthfeel is even slightly off, people are not going to accept it. And so they're spending all of this resources, money, and time. Most of that is going into making it, just like they're trying to make robots look human, most of this is going into the artificial synthetic feel of it to make it real, not the health aspect of it, not anything that's good about it, just the sustainability, right? It's just these BS terms that are being used. I mean, comment on that if you would.
Sustainability is definitely one of the words I see the most in all of this. And people should think, so it's unsustainable to raise animals. Granted, the intensive animal agriculture, that's bad. Everybody can agree, that's bad. But to raise animals even the way that they ought to be raised where they're working with the earth, that's not sustainable. So what's sustainable is taking these tiny life forms, which the ethical vegan world has no problem with tiny life forms being mutilated. They're totally debasing this life, scrambling it up, shocking it back into action after they've reprogrammed it to create these molecules, whether it's their yeast or E. coli or algae, fungi. They're using all of these things to produce molecular equivalents to nature. So that there's no need to even call these things GMO because you're not eating the altered yeast, you're just eating what it expels, and that is non-GMO according to these people. So that they've taken all these labels that people like at my local co-op. I've been fighting with the board of directors and their buyers and their general manager for almost 3 years now, going to board meetings. I gave a presentation there. Everything to get them to see that their words have been weaponized and that these things that they are using as guidelines for how to pick the products to sell in their whole, like, Whole Foods store, they don't even care. They're saying that the companies tell them that this is what's in the food and that it's sustainable, it's non-GMO, and they can then turn this into an even more sustainable system. I'm using air quotes. They can turn it into an even more sustainable system because these things are brewed up in fermentation tanks. And you know what? your town, you've got all these old warehouses and the industry has left, but you know what you can put in there? Vertical farms and fermentation tanks. So you can produce local food and then you'll be sustainable. But they're all run by this computational protein design, designing the life. So you're at the whim of the programmer, right?
Soylent Green is sustainable, right? Am I wrong? Wouldn't Soylent Green be absolutely sustainable? Isn't that the point? Is it right? No, but it's sustainable. We'll be back. Welcome back. You're tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Clint, filling in for Deanna today. Having a really, really interesting conversation. My guest today is Camille. Her YouTube site, her YouTube page is Please Stop the Ride. Am I correct, Camille, that you don't actually have a website, or do you?
No, it's just a YouTube. Well, I have a blog. I have a blog on Steemit, but I just put what I put on YouTube on there.
Well, speak it. What is it?
Oh, sorry. It's Camille1234. So Steemit.com, that's Steemit.com/Camille1234. Camille. Sorry.
Very nice. Well, again, I, you know, you're doing wonderful things and I certainly appreciate it. So, let's get back to this whole sustainable synthetic life.
Yeah, the sustainability goes even further. It does, because, you know, plants aren't sustainable either. You know, I, as far as I'm aware, because I'm not there, they're currently using milled pea protein and mung bean protein and all these things to make their products and mixing it up with the bio-goop that they grew up, the flavors, the bitter blockers, all these things. Some of the bitter blockers are even certified organic, that they're using plants, but that's not the end goal that they have, because that's unsustainable too. And so they're using NASA technology to brew things up with air, with carbon dioxide that they're harvesting, whether it's from smokestacks or from giant carbon capture systems. There's multiple companies I've spoken about, one Kiverdi, but there's Calista. They make fish feed, they make people feed. They want to make it all. There's even articles out now talking about, yes, what's going to make the next meat-free burger, you know.
So, essentially, what you're saying is that they're advertising it's plant-based food. In other words, implying that it's natural, but that eventually even the plants themselves will be manufactured, and therefore it's basically false.
They won't need the plants. I'm saying they call it plant-based. I'm saying based on plants, because they're doing molecular equivalents. And it doesn't even, what they're doing right now, if you look at the ingredient list for some of these things like Beyond Meat and Impossible Burger, I mean, how many plants are even on that list? It's not very
much.
Well,
let's talk about that, because you mentioned it earlier. What is this so-called pea protein that they're using?
Yeah. Well, there's big companies like Cargill and others that produce these pea protein powders that then go in, I imagine, to make these things. Again, I'm not there. But peas have an interesting side to it. I hear that they're bad for fertility, yellow peas, which is the same kind that they use for the pea protein. I think that's interesting. Pregnant women, or women that want to get pregnant, there's all these mommy blogs on the internet warning, stay away from yellow peas. So why? Can you imagine? They detect fertility. That seems like an interesting thing. Oh, wait. That's totally normal in this crazy world that we're living in.
Well, you know, but so here's my problem with all this, because to look at the bigger picture or even the future of this picture. What is this turn? This sounds very much like it's being planned out by the architect of the Matrix, or by an artificial intelligence. In other words, what is the word sustainable? Really, if we were to take that word and put it into the pretext or concept of an artificial intelligence, then technically life itself would not be sustainable. Because life forms require something that you would have to, you know, go in and make all these fields to grow all these peas and everything else, right? So as eventually, if I was an artificial intelligence and I was looking at things with pure logic without any, you know, moral compass whatsoever, because it's a machine and you can't program that, of course, right? Eventually I would probably want to make everything synthetic and absolutely controlled, to the point where we're talking about where nothing is actually, there's the natural world and then there's the synthetic world, and we are all part of the synthetic world, completely detached from nature, because that's the only way we can be sustainable.
Yep. Yep. And whatever they want to put in the biogoop, whatever you need, the micronutrients and all the things that the computer then would decide, they can just program it into the code if they're able to make, they're able to make something that's like an egg out of mung beans and other things. What else can they create out of there? I know one of the micronutrients that they seem to think that we need on the one list for just foods was fluoride, which I know that's a naturally occurring thing, right? But don't necessarily want to add it into my food. But the machine, I mean, to get us to work with the machine, I think that they need us. I don't know. I see what you're saying with the machine at the top of this. I definitely could see this, whatever is at the top of this, needing that machine, because it's all such a complicated plan and a long-running plan that they've got going on. But I've never thought about that, that it would be a machine at the very top.
Well, even if it's not, it's being planned as if, I mean, there are groups out there that worship AI as God. I mean, so, you know, planning for the incoming artificial intelligence, which I think is really the meaning of Antichrist, right? Anti-nature, anti-law of nature. You know, I think really, this sounds like the planning phase, like we're in the experimental sort of planning phase that 100 years from now, they're going to look back and think, wow, what an insane time that was, getting prepared for the great transfer, the great singularity where people become machine, you know, synthetic, essentially, where we can no longer even function outside of this matrix they're creating, this synthetic world they're placing on top of everything, where if we were to be, you know, we can't exist without these synthetic biomarkers or whatever it is. Basically, I guess what I'm saying is, like, we're going to be like machines that need to be oiled and have maintenance put upon us, and because we're eating these synthetic foods and not getting any real nutrients, we have to have the supplements and the until they were, you know, all of this seems like it's almost like a planning phase for the transhumanists.
I have all these notes scribbled down, and one of them is about what if this biogoop food is to be the perfect food for the nanobots in your blood, that they want to do the biobots to feed those, because I remember Jules said something about they're not supposed to feed on the host, so maybe it's the perfect slurry. What you were saying with the thing to the machine thing, people, the singularity be part of the machine. Regenesis, the George Church book, he wrote that with a guy, Ed Regis, the co-author. And that man wrote another book that I read that's The Great Mambo Chicken and the Transhumanist Condition, I think that's what it's called. And in that, a lot of the focus was on the uploading us to the machine so that we can all be together in this artificial world that they've built, and we can travel the universe, and then I'll get together for this end of the universe party. And that does seem to be a big focus to load us all in there. Maybe we're just supporting characters in their digital world, perhaps. But that would, I mean, hooking people up into the virtual world and feeding them their slurry to keep them docile and participating in whatever, because there's no doubt we all have to add to it all, whether it's our genes that they need for fixing whatever problems that they may have, or for solving some technological problem, well, technology, computer problems. I mean, maybe they need us for that, and that's why they're keeping us around and going to such lengths, because it does seem like it's a lot of work to keep us all and feed us. Well, they're going to put their little biobots in there, and they'll be able to police us that way internally and tell what we're ingesting and everything, because the little recorders will come out, and they can keep tabs super easy, but I don't know.
I still stick to my what I call the ultimate conspiracy theory, which is, if you watch the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where in the first clip they show these parasites basically floating through space, and explains how they float through space and they land on different planets, and then they evolve the people. They basically body snatch, do what they do. And all of a sudden you have a new person, basically a parasitically driven entity that, it's a copy of the original, but it's not at all anything close to the original. It's a hive mind. And, I consider that, considering that the Gnostics had their demented brain parasites were the focus of evil, basically, and then all these different cultures talk about these brain parasites. Then you look at the National Geographic cover was zombies, big bugs turned into zombies because of brain parasites, right? All this parasitic thing, 80% of life on Earth, and therefore in the universe is parasitic, right? So we would expect that anything that came to the world would be parasitic, and therefore anything that leaves the world, including us, would be parasitic. And I can't help but think, it's my ultimate unprovable conspiracy theory that this is essentially a group of people, for lack of a better term, a group of psychopathic nerds that we've allowed to get power, whose goals are not their own, who don't know why they're doing what they're doing, but they're doing it anyway. They're creating all these technologies, all these things, to create synthetic life forms that actually can exist in the vacuum of space, et cetera, who don't need anything of nature to sustain them, so that the parasite can then further its existence, find the next planet. this is the basic tenet of the body snatchers, and many other actual religious views, for instance, from the Gnostics and things. So I find that to be a very interesting concept, that none of this is happening because, the great advances in technology, the fact that suddenly we're making transistors and motherboards and computers in 100 years, we've gone this far. Is that even possible unless there's something, some programming, some reorganization of our DNA and our very epigenome, our brains? Is that possible without something like what I'm talking about? That's my ultimate conspiracy theory. Now you can take it as a grain of salt. It explains everything from geoengineering, all the other things that we are all going, out here in this alternative world, we're going, what the hell? Why are people doing this? Why would you do this? Why would you do things that would actually kill your own children unless you had something else driving you? And, I'll just put that out there for posterity's sake. I find it to be a fascinating theory, and very, very much the only thing that I can think of that actually explains why a bunch of psychopathic nerds have taken control and are doing what they're doing. That's the only thing I can think of, honestly. That's the only thing I can think of that's causing this to happen. And that, it sounds crazy, and even though it's the subject of many, many science fiction novels and movies and everything else, it still sounds a little bit nuts. However, It's also the only thing that makes sense to me.
Well, I have another thought, but on your thought, I'm rereading Michael Crichton's The Andromeda Strain, which I thought you had recommended, but actually it was George Church and Ed Regis in Regenesis. I saw when I was rereading that they were talking about this book, but it's saying in here that it's fiction, but one of the assumptions was that complex life, the large life was the intelligent life, but what if it was the tiny life?
Right.
Yeah, that could hitch a ride on a meteor or whatever and come in and
sure. Eat the crystalline
everything.
The crystalline life form, right? Is what it was.
But they're talking with the spores, how they can adore them. Yeah. And they do a thing that they're talking about doing a thing, the panspermia, I think it's called in Regenesis. I mentioned the jettisoning their coded life off to places in the solar system.
Yeah, and it's created this whole religion. I can't call it anything else. It's a religion of what you say, this panspermia, this notion of expansion of the human condition, which is no longer human, right? It's just this, I don't know what else to call it. It's a cult, it's a religion. But where's it coming from is the question. How can people be that insane unless they're being driven somehow? And I gotta be honest, we talked about this a long time ago. I've written extensively on it. In the movie The Thing, there was what I call the Thing test, where they tested the blood to see if, they heated up the blood and if it reacted. Well, then they knew that this was this alien, life form. It was a pretty brilliant scene, really. And I'm thinking that the only way that we're going to solve our problem is actually, I think we need to start testing people's frontal lobe. Because I think what we have is a bunch of psychopaths, whether they're naturally psychopaths or whether they're being chemically lobotomized, vaccinated, whatever, inoculated. I mean, the word inoculation actually means harm, right? To do harm. So, it seems to me like we're going to have to figure out some kind of test. And those people that we actually give and put in these trust positions of authority, political and commercial, they need to be tested. Do they have frontal lobe activity? Do they have a conscience? Are they psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists? Because that's what I feel is running this country right now. I don't feel like there's anybody sane in politics. I don't feel like anybody is sane in what they call the sciences. Right? That humanitarianism has taken over the humanities, two completely different things. Right? There's something very, very wrong right now. And the only way we're gonna actually find out what's wrong, I think, is literally to see, hey, this guy is promoting what we're talking about. Does he have, what's he missing or what's happening in the brain that causes this type of lack of identification with nature itself, right? What causes you to become this monster that promotes such horrible, horrible things? Now again, that's just my ultimate conspiracy theory, but hey, I can't think of anything else. We'll be back, folks. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Republic Broadcasting Network. My guest today is Camille. We're just on a short segment here. Her YouTube is Please Stop the Ride. Again, I highly recommend it. I didn't invite her today just to go by the wayside. Please check it out. In the last hour here, Camille, I'm going to basically ask you to I'm going to give you the reins. I'm going to bow out, if you will. And I'm going to pray. Basically, I want you to give people your most important points. I want you to treat this sort of like a seminar, if you will, or a presentation that you're giving, and I'll chime in and out. But for the most part, I just want to give it over to you because I think what you've uncovered, if you can in 20 or 25 minutes or so, sort of sum it up as to what's going on, why this is so bad, etc. And we'll do that when we come back. We're just joking off air about Soylent Green. It's not just people, it's delicious. That's fucking hilarious. So hilarious. But yeah, like I said, the greatest aspect of this is, you know, is their concentration on making it realistic. Not real, because it can't be real, but the notion that it has mouthfeel is an actual term they use, you know, when it comes to the chemicals they use to make, for instance, ice cream or fake ice cream taste like real ice cream. It's mouthfeel, right? All these different terms they put on it, and then selling it not as, you know, good for you or anything like that, but it's sustainable and ethical and all that. I mean, the whole thing is laughable. It's ridiculous, you know, and it would be ridiculous, I think, to previous generations. But in this generation, again, I want you, I guess what I want from you is I want you to appeal here to the younger generations, appeal to people who've been completely bamboozled and brainwashed into believing these catchphrases, these words, because it's just complete BS. I mean, there's nothing true about what they're saying. And I mean that in the sincerest sense. There's nothing natural. There's nothing real. There's nothing true. There's nothing of God, if you will, in what they're creating. In fact, it's completely opposite. It is literally the creation of a matrix, a false paradigm, a synthetic reality. I can't tell you that scares the living crap out of me. And really, that does seem to be the end goal. Would you agree?
Yeah, and it is scary. It's really hard for me to buy food these days. It's tough. Because everything is possibly this. And you have to, I keep telling everybody, you got to contact the companies that you're buying from. You got to ask them if they or their suppliers are using synthetic biology. And I think that we'll get really surprising answers if everybody would do this. I've asked my co-op to do this too. And they're using those words. What was the Philip K. Dick quote you told me?
I think the second that you even say synthetic, there's no way to have true advertising because it's not truth. It's synthetic. How can you expect the truth in the ingredients list when the whole thing's synthetic in the first place? How do you put the truth if it's synthetic? It's impossible. We'll be back, folks, and I'm going to let this girl loose. Stay tuned.
Network.
Speaks is Clay Richardson filling in today, and we are talking about strange oddity that is synthetic food, synthetic life, lab-grown meat, this thing that they've been predictively programming into us for so long is finally come to fruition. I won't even say it's coming. It's hitting us like a frickin' brick. It's being promoted by all the fast food chains, which is, I mean, you know, it's bad enough to think of fast food as being healthy or, you know, whatever, all the chemicals and things that are added to where 100 different cows are in one hamburger. But then the notion of putting a synthetic fast food, I mean, that's, I think that's even scarier. Anyway, my guest Camille, her YouTube site, Please Stop the Ride, highly recommended by me. And I'm going to let Camille just sort of loose here and let her speak to you, because I know she's got some very important stuff to say and some pretty dire warnings if we don't actually start boycotting this. I mean, boycott, I've told you the story of boycott. Boycott was actually a man, and he boycotted. You should look it up. Look up the word boycott on Wikipedia and read the story. I won't say it now, but boycott is the most effective way of change, of doing things. Camille, please, you know, just lay this all out, what you found, if you would.
I think the most important thing, for people is we got to care about what we're eating. You know, they're counting on the Good Food Institute. They're counting on you not caring. They're just, they think if it's cheap and it's easy and it tastes good, you're in. And that's the most important thing that I would say, because this is just coming so fast. I'm watching these things as they come through my news feed. It's amazing how fast it's happening, but it's not new either. I mean, they've been doing the synthetic biology thing and putting it in us and getting it in us for quite a long time. I mean, they say that the reason why cheese could never, the non-GMO labels couldn't happen because it's cheese, because all cheese, or the majority of cheese, is using synthetic rennet that they're brewing up because people don't want calf stomach in their cheese unless you actually know what else they're using. Maybe people would want it, but they're doing that with the cheese. They've been giving people the synthetic biology insulin for years, decades. They've been doing the insulin that way, which is kind of interesting with the shortages and all of the fear-mongering that I've seen on the lack of insulin, or it's so expensive, and what are people going to do? Well, they've got this technology down. But an aspartame, they say that aspartame is made this way. They brew up the bits and pieces, and we know how, well, we hear how great that's working out for us in the news, too. But they've been doing this for a long time, and as I see it, this is a multi-generational plan to get us to where we are now, to end up wherever we're going. But, I mean, they've even had, like, as far back as Henry Ford was calling for cowless milk, and Winston Churchill wanted to make chicken without a chicken. So it's not as though these are new concepts that they're doing, but it's crazy because they're not just, I mean, when you go to Burger King's website and you look at the regular Whopper, I'm trying to find ingredients lists, and there's simple ingredients lists, but each part says real beef. I suppose I have to look at their patents and see what they mean by real beef, but there's all this talk of being able to make a really fast shift over to like 50% of the meat be replaced by the plant-based meat, and that's they're doing is blended meat. You get Tyson and even Applegate Organics. I'm not saying that all. I would have to look at every single one of these companies to see what exactly it is that they're using, and I'd like to be there to say for sure, but they all are using the same language about these different things, and Applegate's on 5-4-mil, the spam people anyway, so I wouldn't pass them. But they're doing these blended meats where it's not all chicken or all pork, and it tastes great, you know, just the same. So not only are they getting people used to the idea that way, would that be what Burger King's going to use in their Whopper? When it gets to the point where you can't tell the difference between the Impossible Burger and or the Impossible Whopper and the regular Whopper, how do we know what that really is?
But, well, would you say that this is the test market, that this is not just, oh, look what we're doing. We're doing this great thing, sustainable thing. We're actually guinea pigs being tested on to see at what point will we accept this new synthetic food. We're literally giving them feedback on this craziness, saying, yeah, that tastes pretty good. I'd eat that. And then they'll go from there, right? I mean, they're actually getting free testing. I mean, this is like the kind of stuff that they would test drugs on the population, where they need all this, you know, permission and everything, because it's poison and it's harmful. In this case, no, it's, well, it's, they're getting free, feedback. We're giving them the feedback. It says, oh, I love it. Oh, yes, I would eat this. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and it's not just here where people may be aware of what the animal protein tastes like. The up and coming areas of the planet that are the developing nations that haven't all had access to these animal proteins necessarily for as much as we have, they want protein. And these guys are in China. They're all over the place. I have a friend in New Zealand who he said, oh, we'd never get this stuff here. Then we're selling to our animals. And then I sent him a couple of companies that are products out of New Zealand that are this very same thing. And so it's everywhere. And people, if it's tasting good and if they're busy, and I can imagine in places like China, people are allowed to, I can't imagine they're allowed to go looking into things. They'd lose some social credit points if they were investigating the wrong thing. So if they have that market, and if they have the markets around the world, then do they need us to like it so much? Because if Tyson decides that this is what's best for their bottom line, if you want to keep eating chicken nuggets from a freezer bag, you know, if you want to still be able to go to the grocery store and buy stuff, do people care about what's in there now? So will they give a hoot if they change everything over? I mean, you buy it for the brand, right? And it's not the same taste and mouthfeel. It's gonna be great. But I don't know.
I noticed that shape was another thing. They're trying to actually produce a steak that looks like a steak. And I warned people a long time ago that they were promoting insect protein and all these different proteins, and that they were gonna start using 3D printers to create what looks like food or looks like something you're familiar with. And then I've noticed that has become a very popular thing where they're, you know, basically, and my prediction was that we'd all just receive a bag of insect protein on the 3D printer and we just make our own synthetic food at home, kind of like, you know, Star Trek style. So speak to that, because really, it's not just the mouthfeel, it's not just the, you know, it's really the appearance as well.
Oh yeah, be able to do it at home with whatever, there's a group of Shojin Meat and they're working on, it's a open source sort of thing, a bunch of people working on countertop meat production. And if we go where Kaverty and Calista are going, they can just, I mean, if they've got you in your little cubicle apartment, your Agenda 2030, that's where you're at. If they can harvest your output, to feed it to the microbes, you push the buttons and you get your steak that they're talking about. Could be 3D printed. It could also, there's some type of, like a fungus scaffolding sort of system. There's a lot of the steak stuff going on in Israel. They were talking about that with the scaffolding. Then that's plant-based. You know, people wouldn't have a problem. There's no, they've got the, they can do the cellular agriculture too with the stem cell meat, because now they've gone beyond that complaint that people had that it was the bovine, the serum, that now there's a plant-based version for that. I mean, just because they've already produced stem cell meat, they're really pushing it on Asia. But yeah, it's crazy the how far it could go in the future with it. You wouldn't even need to grow plants, but you could, I guess, some vertical farms, and then you can put your synthetic vitamins and nutrients in the water. You are what you eat. People really should think about that, because if you're constantly remaking yourself, I mean, how long will it take for them to reinvent us? I can't think it would take that long, but the bones may be a while, right? But they're making everything. They say they've got palm oil replacement, that I've seen articles going back a decade talking about that we've got to stop this deforestation and destroying the orangutan habitat with the palm oil. But who drove that to be such a big thing? These same industries that now get to go green and change everything over to this. They say that, oh, we have to talk about these things the right way, because we don't want to go the way that GMOs did. People were afraid and all this. No, I think personally that was right in line with all of this, because they got that out of the out of the argument. They cleared that up for us. Like Impossible Foods is the perfect example for getting the notion of how they're able to make plants, I did some air quotes there, but how to make plants taste like a bleeding burger. But they, so impossible, they told us that, oh, we're brewing it up with steam, and it's great thing. Well, I mean, now people won't be so freaked out by that, maybe, because
well, so, not so essentially what you're referring to is the old Hegelian dialectic, the problem, reaction, solution, or this, you know, what's it called, thesis, antithesis kind of thing. So, and I hadn't really considered this before, but I just rung really loudly in my head that most of the environmental warning alarms that we've had, a lot of those are probably false, and they were geared towards again, creating a problem, sort of controlling the reaction through media outlets, and then, you know, offering the solution. It's actually the, now that you say that, it's the perfect way to introduce people into accepting something they wouldn't ordinarily accept, except for the fact that they're saving the planet.
Yeah, they're gonna save the world. It's all good stuff. Yeah, another one that is tricking people, like, you know, how they made plants, they made cannabis illegal, you know, and then they let it come back now, and now I swear, I drive down the street and I see signs for CBD oil everywhere. Well, you can look at company after group after all these different things that they are brewing that. I mean, they're making it with yeast. I'm not saying the stuff on the shelves is necessarily that. I have looked at my co-op, the same place that's got Just Foods and Beyond Meat and all this safety food and all these things on their shelf that I looked at the patent for the company that they're selling, and I went back to them and I was like, guys, from what I see, it looks like they're using real plants. And they're like, well, of course, that's why we picked that company. But they don't care about the food. It's a food store. But they're brewing up these things that people are like, oh, finally I can have my marijuana again. You know, in this handy formula that's just easy to drop or it's accepted. People are on board with it. It's everywhere. Do you see it everywhere out where you are? CBD oil. Anyway, it's something because it's pretty dangerous.
Most of it's crap. Most of it's not what it claims to be. It's just people jumping on the bandwagon trying to get rich overnight. And unfortunately, yeah, People are falling for it. And you know, I'm not going to sit here and say it doesn't work because I know I've seen it work. But for the most part,
the real
you know,
thing or the bottle?
The real thing, yeah. But the stuff you see it in these, you know, these, it's like, you know, it's like in New York, you got these signs up everywhere. We have this, we have that. And it's all crap. It's all like stuff. We have movies and they're pirate movies from China. That kind of thing. You know, it's just this, it's false. It's like you say, and this is the reason you join a co-op or something like that to try to get the real deal. But even then they could get fooled.
I have to wonder about the knockoffs in the CBD oil because they're saying with the food thing that one thing that they are all looking forward to is the rise of the inexpensive copycat so that it makes it more prevalent everywhere. So these knockoffs could be things like mom and pop, whatever, could be all coming from the same groups that are just, I mean, just and also licensing their technologies so that this can go global, the synthetic biology they've got. They can make anything, and why wouldn't they? They want to share it. They want to normalize it. So why wouldn't they put it out under, like, store brands and things like that?
Well, and there again, would you say that that might be the future of food as well, is that you're not – like right now, if I want to buy Microsoft Word, for instance, I have to lease it. I can – you know, most things, especially with Amazon and all these different corporations happening – everything's being leased. You're not actually owning anything. Like, I can't, if I have a tractor, I can't fix it without permission. I have to take it to a special dealer, or mechanic that the company that made the tractor, you know, recommends. And if I don't, they can turn off my tractor remotely and I can't use it because I violated the terms of the lease. So I have no rights on the property that I think is mine, right? Do you think that's the future of food as well, where you can maybe bypass all of these laws, the protective laws, because you're actually voluntarily leasing the food? The food is not actually, the food is patented. It's no longer natural. You know, you can't patent anything in nature, but if I have a bunch of synthetic stuff that I created or invented, I should say, because only God creates, right? If I invented something, then I can patent it, and I'm not necessarily selling you the food as much as I am leasing it to you. I'm saying you have I'm giving you rights to the food. I'm giving you rights to my property to use it, but I'm not actually selling it to you, and therefore I'm not bound by the typical laws that would otherwise protect you against bad selling practices.
Yeah, everything is a service. That's a really good point. That would probably offer them some other protections. And because there's going to be things in there, you would think, that are like the probiotics and the bacillus strains that are in there. Jules and I, we looked at all sorts of things that were using these as little bots. Like they're vectors. They can carry things. They can give little signals when they encounter this or that in your body. So if they're giving you these things temporarily, and then you use your smart toilet or your smart wastewater system, and they pick up your markers and that, yeah, you wouldn't really be owning that, right? You're gonna put it out eventually. That's interesting.
Well, it's almost as if the idea or the purpose of food is being changed. In other words, right, I eat an apple to be healthy and to get the vitamins and nutrients, but now I'm eating food to support the synthesis of life that's happening in my body. I'm not eating food for its nutritional value for natural purposes. I'm eating food now like I put oil in my car, because without the oil, you know, I'd break down. So even it's almost as if the purpose or intention of eating is being altered into this evil thing.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, and it's not even like so much that all the things are going to be coming out of boxes too, or like I just keep seeing this blurry in the Matrix, right? I see that, but the foods with their scaffoldings and everything. Can I go one way that I've seen the future, the possible future here, for like if they are doing our medications and medications and everything in there, our micronutrients, to make sure that we're all getting accurate dosage of everything. There's music again. You've heard of Blue Apron, right? Those groups. Delivery food to your door. I'll continue when we come back.
Yeah, Blue Apron. Absolutely. There's a bunch of those, actually. And I noticed a lot of them are going plant-based.
Yep.
We'll be back.
Yep.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All right. Welcome back. Man, I'm sitting here just really thinking about this and thinking about all the things that are going wrong, and most of them don't really make sense. You know, a lot of these things that they're doing and they're failing. And when you start looking at them a little closer, you realize, hey, are they failing on purpose? Are the systems they're putting out designed to fail? Do they have planned obsolescence? Do, you know, the notion of fish farms and this sort of thing, all these things that are failing, if I'm a company that wants to create, or, you know, more than just one single company, but a coalition of really screwed up people want to create artificial synthetic fish meat, Well, then I'd want the entire fish industry to fail. I'd want to promote that all fish have mercury and that all, you know, that I can look at me over here. I can produce synthetic fish without mercury, without plastic, without the things that you'll find in that dirty, dirty ocean. Oh, don't go to the ocean for fish. That would be sacrilegious in these modern times. Right? Come to me. I'm a corporation. I can create fish from stem cells. I can take the protein structure of a cow or anything else. Well, look at these horrible cattle farms. Look at but nobody ever stops to say, well, why did they do this in the first place? Why did they make these slaughter yards so horrific? Why have they turned and thus demonized their own creation? Right? None of us wanted it that way. Right, well, we didn't want it this way. We're all activists against most of this stuff, and now they're coming out again, problem reaction, and now they're giving us the solution, which is this lab-grown, synthetic, artificial, genetically altered, you know, synthesis of life. I find this, I mean, I'm starting to think about that, and it's starting to make a lot of sense, like, all these problems were created on purpose so that they could offer us this solution.
I absolutely see a design in all of this. And the biggest food manufacturers in the world are all in this. Unilever, Nestle, Cargill, you know, they say that if you shop in the grocery store, you know, you're buying their goods, things that have passed through them. And yeah, why make it so bad if it wasn't to have this way to save us all from their mistakes, what they did to us? But I do want to say just real quick, back on the blue apron thing I said before the break, I've heard that that sort of way, not to bash one brand, the mail order food to your door portioned out just enough to make the meal. I've heard talk that this was a possible way that like food stamps and things like that were going to go, that you have X amount of people in your house, and they're about this big, they know everything about you, so you need this much nutrition, and they would be able to tell if you were eating it in the future here. They'd be able to know if you're getting all of your micronutrients by your biobot when you put them out. But so if we go to the world of, like, universal basic income, you know, the food is a service, and we're not buying it, they'd probably just ship us all our perfectly portioned boxes that's going to get us all of our meds and all of the things that we're supposed to have and keep us so
it would be like a fiber optic cables, right? They could just put cables to every house or tubes to every house and deliver a certain amount of nutrients or proteins from who knows, God knows what. And it would, I mean, you basically go to your, like you go to your refrigerator to get smart water, right? I mean, you basically go into your automated food dispenser and getting some goop or some thing that looks like food but really isn't, right? The same concept of from Star Trek, the food replicator.
Yeah, the digital, the biological converter. So that's Peter Thiel that was investing in that. I remember Joel talking about that a lot. I know they say that in the future they can make your meds that way, so why couldn't they make your eggs? Would they come out cooked? I don't know. Maybe that would be easier. Is cooking, and you really have to see what it is that you're eating. If you just get the end product, that would be maybe easier on people. But yeah, it's an utter disrespect of life as a whole. That's what I think. That there's no, they just don't care. I mean, they're scrambling everything. They even are changing and mixing up the life that does grow on the roots of plants. Like they're like, this would be better. You could make these plants harvest this, like the nitrogen-fixing plants. They could make other plants like that.
That's the common theme throughout this, I think, and it's probably the most disturbing thing. And you know, warned against in countless tomes of history, and that is the notion that man can improve nature. The man can somehow live above or super to nature by improving, right? This goes back to the notion of humanism or or doing things without nature, without God, and it's very, it seems to be, that seems to be the theme throughout this, is improving nature, improving the perfection of the design of nature. That's the most disturbing part to me. We'll come back here in a moment, folks. Stay tuned.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All right, folks, welcome back. Well, been an interesting time here. You know, I can't help but think about how fast, how it's almost overnight. We suddenly have this sort of normalization of this. And I know it's been a long time, a slow process of predictive programming mixed with, you know, these advertisements, these entertainments that have gotten us used to the idea of this synthetic biology and everything else. But it seems like the normalization of it, especially bringing it into the fast food market, you know, and the, you know, the notion that I think the scariest thing for me is the notion that if you don't have something, you don't miss it. In other words, a severely impoverished person that has known nothing else but poverty in their life does not miss wealth, because there is no concept of what being wealthy would be. Now, transfer that to a new generation coming from a generation that's already been programmed and brainwashed into accepting this stuff. Now you have kids with iPhones and kids in front of TVs and smart this and smart that. They've never known anything else. They've never known what it is to grow their own food, or for that matter, they've never been really taught where food comes from, because for God's sake, hey, haven't you heard? Food comes from a freaking lab. It comes from a loom. It comes from an underground, you know, growth medium factor that, you know, you scrape in the well, basically. It comes from a gigantic test tube. Have you heard? I've never known anything different, so why would it bother me? Why would I advocate for nature when I've never been in it? Why would I give a crap about nature when the only exposure I've had to nature is postmodern? Certainly. In other words, through a computer screen. Yeah, I've seen Africa. I've seen giraffes. I've seen this. I've seen cows. I've seen horses. Those things on my cartoons and my pictures and my screens, right? In my I've experienced everything digitally, right? Synthetically. So why wouldn't I then experience or wish to experience really, really good tasting synthetic foods with wonderful mouthfeel, that looks like a steak but isn't, that looks like a vegetable but isn't, it looks like pudding but isn't? Why in the hell would I give a crap? I've never experienced anything else. I think that is the point where we are right now. That we are the, you and me, my friend, are the last generation, perhaps, that is able to even distinguish between what is real and what is synthetic. And you know, when I sat in on that damn conference that I went to, which was absolutely horrible, Free Your Mind conference, and I was sitting up there with Terrence, whatever his name is, the old, you know, the brother of the old, the promoter of all these synthetic, you know, drugs and, you know, and he said, openly, he said, there is no difference between something that is synthetic and something that is real. Someone actually asked him, had the gall to ask that question, is there a difference between what is synthetic and what is real? And he said, ultimately, there is not. And that is the kind of thing that they're teaching people. And they're teaching it in a way that almost equates to the hippie movement. It's the sustainable movement. Conform to the synthesis of things in order to save nature. It's the most bizarre bizarre mindset I can ever possibly imagine. And yet, like the people that are stuck in the Matrix simulation, they don't know anything else and they don't know the outside world exists. Is that how it feels to you right now, that we're in this, almost that we're in a simulation, a complete hypocrisy at this point?
Well, I'm this very hopeful person. Maybe hope's the wrong word, but I think that if people can just shed their mind control, which I have a plan for that. You and I are going to have to talk about that one of these days. But if we could shed our mind control, that we have, like, everybody, break your television right now and stop watching stupid videos on YouTube. I know my videos are YouTube, but they're not stupid. But the entertainment, the mind control is what's totally bringing this on. I mean, how many movie stars, how many YouTube stars and NBA stars, how many of them have invested in all of these technologies? Loads of them. They're all kind of invested in this nightmare world that they're telling us to create. And then, as my friend Jeff pointed out, there's this whole thing going on YouTube where they've got people order what the person in front of you ordered, and all of this to get people, like, buy what the next person is buying, and who knows if that person in front of you actually bought it. Maybe they just started that. Oh, the guy in front of you got the Impossible Burger, you know, so that's what you're going to get today. And they've got in Sweden, I think it is, that they have a 50-50 menu where you don't know which one you're going to get, the plant-based or the regular one. Like, all this novelty of trying it to get people to be hooked on that craveability, which is their word, not mine. I actually even saw that on a Wendy's sign the other day, craveability. But I got that from Unilever. But yeah, we're so programmed into this world. And it's people don't know how to think. They don't know how to think. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I think that we can change, because I'm like a living, breathing proof of that. I can remember it. I can remember being not even a thinking person, and I was totally normal. And there was this time I could have gone one way or the other, and I'm so glad I picked this path I'm on, even though I don't know what to buy when I go to the store, because all the food is coming from a...
But isn't that the problem, is that you're still going to a store?
Well, yeah, I mean, but when I go to a store, I go to my co-op, I do buy, like, paper towels and things at the regular store. I know that's probably a problem. But, I mean, when I go there, I get the local produce. They look at me. I'm the most aggravating person at my co-op, I swear, because I just processed 20 pounds of local garlic and 40 pounds of local onions. Like, I will not buy things out of season, and if I can't get them, I mean, I buy bananas, and I'm really thinking I'm going to wean off of that. I can get pawpaw. I hear pawpaw tastes like bananas, but I don't know where to get it at this point. But yeah, I refuse. Like, I get my milk from a farm locally, raw milk, which that all so many of these farms are being legislated out of business. This one is about to close, so we're trying to get another raw milk farm around here, because if people don't want to be farmers anymore. People need to want to do those noble things. Like, it's like a lack of choice. We won't have choice. People tell me, oh, Camille, you can get what you want to get. And I tell them, no, you don't understand. They're changing it all. They are taking away the choice. They're taking it away. And that's terrifying. But like I said, I talk about this everywhere I go. I mean, I got a box of business cards printed up with my YouTube channel on there, because I was talking to everybody and I'm telling them, you got to go here. And I give little snippets of what I'm looking at, and then I'm finding a piece of paper to scribble the channel name. Oh, I got these cards. They've got my logo. I'm actually almost out of them. But it's just, I mean, I don't think I have a very large reach on platforms like YouTube, which is where I am. I should maybe do a website. I don't know. But I don't have a huge reach there. But I talk a lot. And everywhere I go, I'm telling people about this. On YouTube, it helps. Heck, sorry, they won't even let me leave comments on YouTube anymore. People should know that's a very sensitive platform, that I can't even leave a comment. If I leave a comment, I log out, it disappears. I've tried to talk to people on these videos where they're talking about these foods, and it just goes away. They don't want people to know, which is like, well, is YouTube invested in this? Wait, Google, Yeah, they are, actually. And they donate their computational protein design time and processing. So they helped in my proteins make those fruit sugars. Don't be deceived, people. If it says sweetened with a fruit, oh, this ketemphe, this wonderful African fruit. No, it's based on that, and it's 100% synthetic.
I think that applies to all words, and this, again, this is a battle of words. And when you legalize, when you make a word legal, in other words, if I say something is natural in the legal realm, that has nothing to do with nature. And I don't think people understand that. Now, a word like organic, okay, it's specifically defined in legal, and that's a good thing. However, remember, it still doesn't have anything to do with nature. So now something that says organic can be only 75% organic. It doesn't mean anything. These are all legal terms, and legal terms are the undoing of nature. They're the undoing of reality. That's the whole purpose behind legalizing things and giving license. So when I say the word natural, or when I say the word sugar, or when I say the word anything that you think is a natural term or a term of nature, it is not by its very source. It has to be against nature. Even the word nature itself, when I'm speaking legal, in fact, if you're a natural, you know, you're an idiot. That's what the natural actually means, because you haven't been educated in their system. That's what the word natural means. Natural born? Yeah, you're a born fool. But people don't want to, they want to romanticize it, think it means something good. But in fact, you know, to anybody in the know, if you're a natural, you're the lowest form of life. You're no different than cattle because you're not regenerate. You're not educated. That's not me saying that. Go look it up. Go look up the word natural. Go look up the word organic. They don't mean what you think. The word organic doesn't even mean what you think in legal. So you have to understand that when they're putting these words as advertising, it's all natural, 100% natural. I mean, they're basically saying, hey, you're a fool if you buy this, because that doesn't mean it's natural. That's not what the word means in legal ease. You see, just like food doesn't have to actually be food.
Nope. People have to want to change this, and people have to want to do better. This is the only way that I think that this can even turn around, because I do think it can turn around. But even if people want to jump into the world of, I'm going to become a farmer, or I'm going to get my own chickens, I'm going to grow my own plants. We got a problem with the fact that they're tampering with those animals before they ever leave, like the chicks, you know, the little hatchlings. They don't want to make a bunch of boys. Those are useless. So they're modifying them with CRISPR so they can tell as soon as the egg is laid whether it's a boy or girl. The right light.
So CRISPR, another thing in my documentary, I mean, CRISPR is like one of the worst things that come up with. CRISPR, the CRISPR causes so many deformations and so many alternative pathways for the genome, the epigenome. It's like the number one, when they CRISPR something, the side effects are incredible when you actually read about it. If you get a chance to look it up, it's so scary to look at the side effects of doing CRISPR, because, you know, you think, you're looking at like this giant chain, you're taking out one link and replacing it with another, but you're not looking at what it does to the rest of the chain. That one little change that you're making that they say is so miraculous, I mean, it's the cause of cancer, they're causing so many bad things to happen through CRISPR. It's acknowledged, it's a known entity, but they're still promoting it. Almost like it's a toy, like anybody can do it. Oh, it's cheap. We can do anything. And I'm noticing that they're talking about using CRISPR for food and for meat and all that thing. I mean, you're in an area of such, it seems like they're starting to control things more, but actually these things are completely out of control being promoted as something that is a form of control. But the truth of the matter is the side effects of all of this, including this food we're talking about, this false food, the side effects are unknown. Some of them are known, but for the most part, the epigenomic changes cannot be registered. They're not something that can be known. The cancer, the carcinogenic effect cannot be known. And let me be clear. I've got a paper where they're discussing growing vaccine cultures on cancerous cells because they're so effective. That's what they do now. And when you're talking about these immortal cell lines for vaccines, when you say immortal cell line, you're talking about the unrestricted growth of a cells, right? So that's cancer. They've been growing vaccines on cancer for who knows how long. And that's why you have cancer, because you can't filter, they say on the labels, you can't filter out those cancerous or what they call immortal cell lines. It's cancer, folks. They're growing these things on cancer, but they call it immortal cell lines. And that is what this meat is going to be. It is growth of proteins and various forms of cells without purpose. It is carcinogenic growth of cells, and they call it clean meat, or whatever the word you used before. They're calling it cancer. Cultivated cancer. They're calling it meat. But rest assured that when something is growing without purpose, without organization, it's cancerous, folks. You're eating cancer. That's what this is. There is no getting around that, because it's not being grown under natural or biologically controlled circumstances. Not under the design of nature, the design of God. It's cancer being grown in a lab and called meat. That's what you're eating. And
on CRISPR, when speaking at the Center for Effective Altruism, George Church said that it's doing something totally different from what it was doing biologically. They turned it into a device that damages DNA, which we call editing, he said.
So absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, I remember seeing videos and pictures where they're talking about the nasty meat industry where they cut the cancers off. But now they're brewing it on that.
That's all it is. And that's why, you know, this is why they're so concentrated right now on forming it, trying to actually make it grow so that it actually looks like a steak or looks like a chicken, right? I mean, pretty soon they're gonna try, you know, getting bones in there because they want it to look natural. But there's nothing natural, and there never will be anything natural about it. That's the scary part. It's you can sell anything, I guess, if you make it look like the real thing.
Oh yeah, and there's products out there. They've got like the molecular whiskey. They're doing alcohol this way. They're doing oils, food, everything, even the pharmaceutical.
You're looking at a brand new whole mecca of disease that's going to happen from this. We'll be back, folks. Alrighty, folks. Unfortunately, we have officially run out of time, and so I want to thank you for listening today. I hope you got some takeaway from this. Appreciate my guest today, Camille. Camille, why don't you tell people one more time your YouTube channel, blog, whatever, and then I don't know if you might want to tell people where you are in the country and if they wanted to contact you perhaps. That's completely up to you. I didn't ask you about that, so I won't do it for you. So why don't you go ahead and close us out here with that?
Thanks again for having me on. I guess I did give the STEMIT address wrong. So it's STEMIT, STEEMIT.com, and the / and then the @ symbol, CAMILLE 1234, which you can get there through all my YouTube videos because I link to the sources in there. It takes you right to this blog. So just go to my YouTube and you'll find the source link. But, and where I am, I'm here, but people could email me if they wanted to. please.stop.theride@gmail.com if you want to. But please, I mean, really take any of the videos that I've made, take their transcripts for some of it, take them and use them, share them, put them on your own website, your own YouTube, download it, load it up as your own. I need you to tell people, because I talk a lot, but I can't talk to everybody, and although I'm trying, but that's what we have to do. People don't know, and this stuff freaks them out. People don't know. So you, now you do, and when you know better, you do better. So help me.
You know, and I think this would have to be a grassroots thing. Like you say, you're censored, I'm censored, everybody's censored that has anything important to say, especially when it's the truth. I would like to see people go to make little cards like you do and go to McDonald's or go to Burger King and just start handing them out. Is this burger really impossible? Yes, it is. It is impossible.
It has to be.
And you know, more and more I'm realizing I've said this forever, but we're eventually going to have to, there's going to be a breakaway from society. People who just, you can't exist. You either have to exist in nature or in their synthetic environment. You cannot do both, and you cannot, you won't be able to exist without their sustenance, the second you go transhuman, the second you start accepting these biological functionalities and improvements, as they call them, with every improvement, you're going to have a mechanic. You're going to have a new kind of doctor that fixes your organic, denial of technology, because art and reality do not mix. Technology and reality do not mix.
This stuff is already out.
Preserve what you've got left. Absolutely. Jeez, craziness. Anyway, I thank you so much for joining me today. Like I said, Deanna will be back next week. I hope this really resonates with you both, because this is how they are changing you, not just through drugs, not just through vaccines. And remember, a vaccine or an inoculation, and just by crossing the blood, just by putting a patch on your arm, you are vaccinating yourself. You are inoculating this thing. Arm, folks. I want to thank you again, and I'll see you later.